He was our Bob Dylan and Dylan Thomas, a Yiddish troubadour and hard-drinking lyric poet who wrote in regular rhymes and rhythms about the lives and unrequited loves of the downtrodden. His name was Itzik Manger, and the Bible was the book he loved most in the world, especially those parts that told an inside personal story. Starting in 1935, he began to capture them in verse by breaking down each biblical episode into a three-part drama. The capstone of Manger's love affair with the Bible, perhaps not surprisingly, is the poem reserved for his namesake, Isaac. In this, he joined a proud line of Jewish writers named Saul, Chernichovsky, David, Pinsky, Frischmann, and Yocheved Bat Miriam, who also wrote of their biblical counterlives. Manger had no need to tread lightly across the biblical story. So far as he was concerned, he, his parents, and his grandparents were the biblical story. No need for him to reimagine the ancient Near Eastern setting. Eastern Galicia was the biblical setting. No need to study scripture and midrashic commentary because Yiddish language and folklore were the sacred texts. So the shtetl imaginary, the East Galician shtetl arrested in time at the turn of the 20th century, became the setting for Manger's remarkably compressed retelling of the Akedah. The most famous biblical narrative was recast into 9 four-line stanzas that rhymed exactly the way that Yiddish folk songs do. Abraham takes Itzik to the sacrifice. The gray light of the dawning touches the earth with dawn. Eliezer, the loyal servant, puts the black team's harness on. Taking the child in his arms, old Abraham shuts the door. Over his ancient roof, there gleams a blue and pious star. Up, Eliezer! The whip rings out. The road has a silvery look. Sad and lovely, the poet says, are the roads of the holy book. The only real landscape for Manger is a poetic landscape. So the biblical Baboker, early next morning, Genesis 22:3, Manger renders as Dämmerung, a German loanword that means twilight or dawn, to signal the ideal state of transition from darkness to light. With midrashic sleight of hand, the poet turns the nameless two servants into Eliezer, the loyal servant whom Abraham addresses in Ukrainian, and the Middle Eastern asses are replaced with two ordinary horses. The blue morning star, shining above Abraham and Sarah's house, adds another domestic touch. If at this point the patriarchal landscape, old and ancient, seems both sad and lovely, as Act I draws to a close, our primary sense of the scene surely comes down on the side of loveliness. But how lovely can it be if Mother Sarah has been left behind to guard an empty cradle? Once the trip is begun, the die is cast. The graying willows on the way run to the house again to see if his mother weeps beside the cradle of her son. Daddy, where are we going now? To Lashkev, to the fair. Daddy, what are you going to buy at Lashkev at the fair? A soldier made of porcelain, a trumpet and a drum, a piece of satin to make a dress for mother who waits at home. Abraham feels his eyes grow moist and the steel knife pressing, where it scalds the flesh beneath his shirt. It's going to be some fair. Absent mommy, it's up to the father to allay his son's fears. Every Jewish parent knows the lullaby, Daddy's away at the fair, as surely as every Jewish parent has read and reread the story of Abraham taking Isaac to the Akedah. The one adds pathos and tension to the other, because something has already gone wrong. In every Yiddish lullaby, it is the mother who stays home with the child. And here, not only does the cradle stand empty, but Daddy has even taken the innocent child along on the fateful journey. Why? And where are they really headed? The two middle stanzas of the poem, moreover, don't read like a mere paraphrase of your standard lullaby. They read like a desperate dialogue. It's going to be some fair, the father mumbles under his breath as he presses the sacrificial knife to his chest. The father-son dialogue that lies at the heart of the second act is suffused with death and foreboding, exactly as in the celebrated German romantic poem Erlking, Goethe's ballad of a father driving his only son into the hands of death. Reread as a ballad, the Akedah is the most fateful journey of all, for it is the archetypal Jewish narrative. Eliezer, stop at the watermill. Stop for a while and wait. Isaac, my son, and I go alone from here on foot. Eliezer sits on the driver's seat and casts an anxious look. Sad and lovely, the poet says, are the roads of the Holy Book. By now, the balance has measurably shifted to the sad side of the scale. Sad, but by no means terrifying, either in comparison to the biblical account of the sacrifice or in comparison to Goethe's Erlking. Manger's Midrash domesticates God's terrible test of faith and Goethe's sexual and supernatural overtones. The Yiddish Midrash ends not with the angel staying the executioner's hand, or with the Erlking claiming his innocent victim, but with three benign figures: old Abraham, determined to carry out God's difficult command; the loyal Ukrainian servant Eliezer, who is quietly apprehensive; and the poet, who has every reason to believe that the story will end well. What then is the road that Itzik must travel? It is a road in which scripture and life are one, in which the natural landscape is suffused with the biblical past, not only because the poet says so, but also because that fusion is inscribed into the Yiddish language itself. In Yiddish, the Slavic word for road is shlach, which, as Manger was the first to discover, makes a perfect rhyme with Tanakh. With this Slavic Hebraic rhyme, Manger marks the end of the poet's first and last acts. Alas, even the master translator Leonard Wolff cannot capture this in English. Like classical Midrash, Manger's must be read in the original as well. Throw in the Dämmerung, the magical moment of lyric dawning, and you have a perfect triptych of the Slavic landscape, the Hebrew Bible, and the poetic imagination. Thanks to Goethe's inspiration, Manger was able to reread the Akedah as a journey. The very title, in the Yiddish, presages a journey. Avrom Avinu Folt means Abraham the patriarch travels, as does the fourfold repetition of the word road. On this road, little Itzik, always the child, becomes Manger, the Bible-intoxicated Jew. Henceforth, the Bible, not German Romanticism, not the ballad revival, was to be his muse. But he would circle back to the Bible through his dual commitment to modern poetry and Jewish continuity. A Jewry that did not engage its own myth as preserved in scripture, he would write in 1939, was doomed to self-destruct. Only that engagement, that willingness to embrace one's biblical counterlife, would ensure that the Jewish journey went on forever. I should like to conclude with the poem in its Yiddish original. Avrom Avinu folgt mit Yitzchakn zu der Akede. Die grohe Morgendämmerung dämmert über der Erd, der alte Getreier Eliezer spannt in Wogen die Karre fährt. Avrom trockt auf seine Hände sein Benzkunem Arois, ein frumer, blauer Stern blitzt über dem alten Häus. Hei da, Eliezer! Das Beitschel knallt und not silbert sich der Schlach. Treurig und schön, sagt der Poet, sennen die Wegen von Tanach. Die grohe Werbes passe weg und läufen auf zurück. A Kukton, sie die Mame weint über der Pusterwig. Wo fahren wir jetzt der Tateschi? Ken Laschgev, affen Jerid. Was wirst du mir kaufen, Tateschi, in Laschgev, affen Jerid? A Zellnerl von Porzellei, a Peikel und a Trumet und Vater Mamen in der Heim. Atlas, auf ein Kleid. Avroms Augen wären feucht, fühlt, wie das Messer briet unter der Schuppitze das Leib. Schon einmal Ayarid. Eliezer, bei der Wassermühle, dort sollst du bleiben stehen. Von dort will ich mit Yitzchak zu Fuß schon weitergehen. Eliezer auf der Kelnie brummt und guckt als auf den Schlag. Treurig und schön, sagt der Poet, sehnen die Wegen von Tanach.